everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It's a Monday morning. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good weekend, CC.
Great weekend.
Yeah.
How was you guys' weekend?
We were good, but we weren't at the Sixers game Friday night. We didn't jet all over the place and then make it back in time for our show. That wasn't the weekend.
CC just an international man, a mystery man.
No.
Jimmy Butler giving you his shoes.
Oh, Jimmy Butler, that's my guy.
Talk
to Ben Simmons' family. That's my new guy.
Yeah, a lot going on. I'm just curious if the people in Minnesota are a little upset with you. You embrace Jimmy right after he gives them the stiff arm.
Yeah, the people, come on, man. I've done so much there. I'm beyond all
that. Okay.
Let's get it.
We got a big show for you today. Big Ben led a huge comeback. Saints might be the team to beat in the NFL, but we're going to start with the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott and the boys trying to make it two wins in a row for the first time all season. This was a slow game till the fourth. Zeke giving Dallas a 19-9 lead with a 23-yard touchdown run. But the Falcons would come all the way back, evening it up with a 34-yard touchdown pass from Matty Ryan to Julio Jones, just under 2 minutes to play. All right, 44 ticks left. Dak Prescott looking to get something going here. And he finds Cole Beasley, gets it down to the Falcons' 30. That would set up a 42-yard field goal for Brett Maher, who nails it. Cowboys win. They're now 5-5. That made Jerry a very happy man. Here is Dak Prescott after the win.
Our backs are against the wall, and they're still against the wall. And just the fact this shows the character of this team, of us swinging and fighting and coming out, and the ups and downs in this game, adversity, success, the way we just played through it and stayed together as a team and able to go down there and make that game win a field goal. I mean, credit Brett. Missed one earlier in the game, and to come back, That shows the character right there, just within him. And then to make that game win a field goal when it mattered was huge.
All right, Nick, so how do we see this Dallas team now? Suddenly, this is a team that's winning in a winnable division. Are we starting to see the Cowboys as a playoff team?
I think you have no choice. You have no choice given what they've done the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we were in a position where Washington was 6-2 with a healthy quarterback, a healthier offensive line, and the Cowboys hadn't won a game on the road. Since then, the Cowboys won at Philadelphia, had what I thought was their best defensive performance of the season yesterday, given who their opponent was against the Falcons, and they followed the script. There is a benefit, C, to talking about the Cowboys as often as we do, which is we got this team down. What is the script for Dallas? Dak play a clean game, give the ball to Zeke 25-plus times, and trust the defense to be something that people don't want to acknowledge it as, which is one of the absolute elite front sevens in all of football. And then, in the critical moments, if you have to, ask Dak to make two or three plays. And yesterday, it was check, check, check. And while they were playing, unfortunately and really, I mean, sports-wise, tragically, Alex Smith got his leg snapped. And now all of a sudden, the Eagles look cooked. We found that out later in the day.
Giants already are cooked.
The Giants been cooked since week one. And Washington is about to start Colt McCoy on a Thursday night in Dallas. So everything that could have gone right for Dallas the last 2 weeks has. So you have to look at them as a playoff
team. And they're one of the few teams from an old-school standpoint, as far as moving forward, if they understand who they are, they can do it. They can play old school. They can play defense. Their defense, as we said, the preseason coming into the season, we thought that would be probably the most underrated part of the team. They've lived up to that. And now, from an offensive standpoint, Dak throw the ball less than 30 times. Zeke touched the ball at least 20 to 25 times. Our biggest problem was, Jenna, through the first 8 games, they didn't know this. So it wasn't like all of a sudden now we're getting all this new information. The Cowboys all along should be a playoff team. When you look at the kind of talent that they have, even though they're still very, very young, they should be a playoff team. But when you can't win on the road, and then also what happened to Washington over the last couple weeks, they're one of the teams that we thought, man, there's going to be a team to catch fire in November and December and finally galvanize their season. Who are going to be those teams? Dallas Cowboys are leading the pack. And also, you have to keep an eye on what's going on in that division. So they had the opportunity to be able to recover. Other teams in other divisions that don't have the same problems at the top, they won't be able to recover. But it seems like the Cowboys are going to be able to do that.
So, Nick, if they are going to make the playoffs, What's more important? Because we know what Zeke's going to do. Is it Dak playing well, or is it that defense playing well? Which is going to have to be the more sureable thing?
The defense. Listen, the Cowboys lead the league in games allowing 20 points or fewer. 7 times this year, they've held their opponent to 20 points or fewer in the highest scoring year in league history. Like, the defense has to be great throughout. You said we know what Zeke's going to do. We know what Zeke needs to do. Like, there is no better indicator on if the Cowboys win or lose than Zeke's stat line. Just look at it. Wins, losses, Zeke Elliott, we can show you the splits. He, in wins, he's given you over 121 on the ground. There it is. 121 on the ground and 44 catching. Those are in wins. In losses, less than 70 on the ground and half of that receiving. Like, when he's great, they win. When he's average, they don't. And for those, like, so I agree with you. We know what Zeke needs to do. And if he looks like he did the last 2 weeks, I think the defense is going to be consistent.
But does he look like that if they're giving him the touches and the carries? Because in the beginning, they just weren't, and those weren't his numbers.
No, Zeke is, he's proven himself. When he's in the lineup and when they give him the ball, there is no theory behind. They just didn't make enough first downs. They played bad offensive football, didn't get productivity outside, and when they needed Dak to be clutch, he couldn't be clutch. So they weren't a good offense. Zeke was the best part of that offense, and we know that they had a number of changes that they were going through on the offensive line. The most significant thing for me is not only changing the attitude, Scott Linehan and what they're calling offensively, it has been the offensive line. When they changed offensive line coaches, appointed Mark Colombo, the former Cowboy offensive lineman, you can see that they're starting to double team more, use their size, and you could see they were getting Zeke into the secondary quite often. And that's what you have to be able to do with the Cowboys. That's what we saw at Philadelphia last week on the road. And that's what we saw yesterday in Atlanta. Zeke getting into that secondary. And you can see he's a special runner when he gets in open space.
And I want to give Chris credit for seeing something before it happened that I wouldn't have seen and I didn't see coming, which is what the addition of Amari Cooper does for the Cowboys' rushing attack. What the just the threat, even if he hasn't been productive since his second year in the league, and even if he's yet to have a huge game with Dallas,
yeah,
you are seeing that teams cannot just say, we're going to put 8 in the box, 90% of the plays, and dare you to throw it. They have enough respect for what he can do and what he has done at some point in his career that Zeke is having easier running lanes, mm-hmm, and he has to make one guy miss instead of two guys miss.
And he makes it easier for the others. He makes it Michael Gallup, for him to be a number two, a young guy, a third-round pick, a lot of speed. You can see late in the game, Amari didn't make the play, but he got the coverage. Mm-hmm. Gallup was able to run the deep comeback on the outside. That was one thing we didn't see from Dallas and also from Dak, throwing the ball deep and outside late in the game. We've seen Cole Beasley. He runs the choice route to be able to seal the game to get him in game-winning field goal range because of the coverage on Amari. So his overall effect to allow this offense to thrive, you can see it when you watch the tape.
But wasn't the addition of Amari Cooper, yes, to help free up Zeke a little bit, but also to see what we can get from Dak? And if Dak's not using Amari Cooper, then...
It was both. And listen, here's where I want to give Dak credit. Dak had, going into that final drive, Dak had 100 yards passing to wide receivers. He was not throwing. And then on the final drive, he made 3 big plays. A throw to Gallup, a throw to Zeke, which was a little bit of a dump off. Zeke did the work, and then the big throw to Beasley. But I think the reason you got Amari Cooper was multi-layered, but primarily it was they were trying to make the playoffs. Jerry Jones didn't want to have to fire everyone, didn't want to have a lost season. Mm-hmm. Amari Cooper makes them better.
Yeah, he makes them a lot better. And when you watched, it doesn't necessarily equate to what's going to be on the sheet after the game, the stat sheet, but what he makes his defenses do and make them play honest, it results in Dak, less pressure on him, more one-on-one throwing lanes for the other wide receivers, and one less person in the box for Zeke and that offensive line. And that's what we've seen the last couple weeks.
All right, Cowboys walk away with the win. They are very much in the playoff hunt. Talk much more about this. Eric Mangini will join us in a little bit. But first, coming up, how was Pittsburgh able to steal a win yesterday? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Steelers-Jags in a second. But first, Lions wide receiver Kenny Golladay drives backwards to make the great touchdown grab.
He's been one of the better stories of the year, Kenny Golladay. He, a guy that at the beginning of the season kind of jumped onto the scene. He made some big plays in the Lions' comeback yesterday. He's turned into Matt Stafford's favorite target. It's one of the reasons they thought they could get rid of Golden Tate.
Great throw by Matthew Stafford, too.
He's been awesome. He's been really good.
All right, moving on. Cowboys, Falcons. Now, watch this. Matt Ryan overthrows Julio Jones. Julio has to turn into a defender against safety Jeff Heath.
Given their injuries, see, he might be the best defensive back they have left.
Yes.
I mean, this was a huge play in the
game. That was a huge play. Very smart. The wide receiver knows he has no chance. Once you know you have no chance to catch the ball, you must turn into a defender, even if you have to interfere with them, because you still have possession of the football.
All right, college football. Wisconsin's Danny Davis makes an unbelievable one-handed touchdown grab.
Oh, you don't see that out of Wisconsin very often now. Let me see that.
Now, this right here will be my evidence when I present my case
about
that it is the gloves.
About the gloves. I knew it.
When the people in Wisconsin start grabbing it like that, it must be the gloves. Like, they known for stuff, but gloving, it's not it. Producing big old linemen and things like that. But not that.
I mean,
it's the gloves, people.
But he does a good job holding off the defender with the left hand, right? Going up and snagging it.
Did he land in bounds here?
Yeah,
did he get
one butt cheek? One butt cheek.
Okay.
One butt cheek equals 2 feet.
Cheeks now. Yep.
Back
I need to
my
know.
Corner. All right, Big Ben and the Steelers trying to make it 6 wins in a row, taking on the team that, for whatever reason, has their number in the Jaguars. Ben throwing 3 picks, including that one, into the end zone to Jalen Ramsey. See? Got their number. Steelers down 16-0. Then the comeback begins. Down 3 with less than a minute to go. Roethlisberger connects with Antonio Brown, who takes it down to the 2. All right, we got 8 seconds left. Big Ben runs in for the touchdown. Jalen Ramsey cannot believe it. Jags have lost 6 straight now. Steelers go on to win 20-16. Here is Ben on the comeback.
We just never quit, you know, and that's what's kind of special about this group is we're going to fight to the end, and we literally fought to the end.
Against a defense that's they make their feelings known, how did it feel for you to get the last laugh in this case?
Well, they're a really good defense. Like I said, they like to talk a lot before the game, during the game, but I'm carrying the game ball home.
It's a very happy Ben Roethlisberger right there. All right, Nick, what did the Steelers show you from this come-from-behind win last night?
Man, that the Jags do have their number. Like, that the Jags, something about this Jags
defense
about
this team.
Really bedevils Ben Roethlisberger. Even in the playoff game where the Steelers put up a bunch of points, he was throwing pick after pick. But it also showed me this Steelers team is resilient, is well-coached, and recognized, man, there are no giveaway games here. It would have been so easy. I know you don't really quit in a football game, but when you are down 16-0 and you can't, the one time you've moved the ball and ended with a pick in the end zone, it wouldn't have shocked me if they would have said, you know what, we're going to run James Conner, see if he pops one, and it's just not our day. And that's not what they did. And they got, to me, their best win of the year, all things considered. Their most impressive win of the year, all things considered. And with a loss, they're all of a sudden the 4th record in the AFC. With a win, they maintain the 2nd best record in the AFC.
It's clearly in sports, there are teams that match up better against other teams. And sometimes it's not on the tail of the tape. You just can't see it. It's not all, I think their linebackers are good against their run game. Sometimes you just can't. How they match up against Pittsburgh's offense from a Jacksonville defensive standpoint, and they force Pittsburgh into multiple turnovers almost every time they play them. So when you have that type of recipe, now what they typically have the last several games, Jacksonville over Pittsburgh, is also they've had more explosive offenses by Blake Bortles. They had that the first half. They were not able to make any adjustments in the second half. That was the biggest thing in this game. When I look at this game, and I thought your points were exactly as far as the matchups, certain teams have other teams' numbers. But you don't win 5 games in a row just by accident in this league. So you could start to see the Pittsburgh Steelers. And there's 3 things I'm going to take from this game. Number one, old spicy mouth Jalen Ramsey. He is a hell of a football player. And when he is focused, there is a style. The reason why he plays that way, his height, his speed, his intensity, his ability to be able to catch the football. That's why he's a special, special footballer. That was the number one thing I took from the game.
He was great.
Number two thing I took from the game, Mike Tomlin is a good football coach. And you could see it down 16-0. The adjustment they made at halftime and what they did to them in the fourth quarter from a strategy standpoint, that was my second point. Third point is Ben Roethlisberger is a bad dude. That's the reason why he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's won so many games like this in bad weather, on the road, looks bad for a half, three quarters. But
all but 5 minutes.
When it is money time, it's like he's like one of those veteran quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, like Tom Brady. They can have two and a half, three bad quarters and then come light you up. And from the, if you look at the game from the time they were down 16-0 and look what Ben did, his numbers were phenomenal. So those are the three things that I thought you should really take. You shouldn't leave that game and not know. Jalen Ramsey's special. Mike Tomlin is a very, very good football coach. You can see from a strategy standpoint. And that guy, Big Ben.
Big Ben, after playing really poorly early. Like
yes.
That's your, the, and even late on the comeback, down 16-13, he throws a perfect ball to James Conner for the game-winning touchdown. And he just drops it. And then is able to, it looked like he threw a pick to end the game in the end zone, but then you saw it wasn't his fault at all. His receiver got pulled down by his face mask. And the game-winning touchdown, that was not a quarterback sneak. That was a shovel pass.
Yes.
It was a called shovel pass, and Ben
called shovel pass, also the quarterback can run.
Can run. And,
yes.
And Ben on the play, he sees the shovel pass in there, gets hit, and gets it across the goal line. But I do want to talk about this from the other team's side. The team that knocked Pittsburgh out of the playoffs last year. Why did Jacksonville not go to the Super Bowl last year? Because in the second half against New England, they tried to run out the clock instead of continuing to play. They got up 16-0 on Pittsburgh. They had four drives, three and out every time. Run up the middle, pass, punt. Run up the middle, sack, sack, punt. Run up the middle, pass, punt. Run up the middle, run up the middle, run up the middle, punt. It wasn't just that they were running. It was Leonard Fournette into the teeth of the defense every single time. The Steelers, I know they didn't have Stephon Tuitt. Maybe the Jags thought this was their best path, but they were so afraid of Blake Bortles making the awful mistake that they gave Pittsburgh extra possessions, and Pittsburgh, you know, with 4 seconds left, wins the game.
Can I just add one more to your list of three, mm-hmm. which is takeaways, is this Pittsburgh defense, which we all talked about coming into the season. If you had one concern with Pittsburgh, it's going to be their defense. You don't have Ryan Shazier. How are they going to fill that role? Their defense has played really well for the last couple of weeks, and they kept them in the game yesterday until Roethlisberger, mm-hmm. was able to put things together in the last 5 minutes.
The Steelers are now, in their last 16 road games, 14-1-1. The losses are an overtime loss to Chicago and a loss, a tie to Cleveland early in the year. Like, that was the knock.
That one loss and the one tie, they were all Mike Tomlin's fault.
All right. Right. Well, that's what I was going to say.
It's all the players on the wins. That one and one, they were Tomlin's.
Right, right. time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Ben Roethlisberger had an up-and-down day on Sunday, as we just mentioned. On the one hand, he threw three picks. And with the same hand, he threw for over 300 yards and ran in the game winner. CeCe, put a grade on Big Ben's day.
I'm going to give him a B. And the reason why is because I always try to tell my kids and everything, the professor's going to give you a decent grade for just participating. If you show up and say, man, I'm here every day. I'm doing the best I can do. I'm trying. Like, it's not the best work. You know, I'm turning in pop quiz on me. I'm turning in C's and everything. But final exam, I did ace the final exam, and that brought me up to a B. So I'm Ben Roethlisberger, a B, because he stayed in there steady. And I said, you got to go to class, Nick, right?
Right.
Can't be sleeping in your room and everything.
He was failing up until the midterm and the final, and he did great on both of those. So I'm with you on the B. I can't give
him a... Ben was doing good. He was participating in class. He was there every day. He ain't the smartest student, Nick.
No.
Okay?
I can't give him an A because of the things C mentioned, but what should be noted is this. The Steelers had no rushing game. James Conner, 9 carries for 25 yards. He had to throw the football, and early on, the Jacksonville defense was solving him. He made big plays late. The pass that James Conner dropped, the run, the touchdown pass we just showed, so that brings up to a B.
So both of you gave him a B?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sounds good. All right, take a break. Coming up, Could Lamar Jackson be the long-term answer for the Baltimore Ravens at quarterback? Next on First Things First. The Las Vegas Invitational tips off Thanksgiving Day here on FS1. First, number 7, North Carolina battles Texas. Then number 20, UCLA takes on 11th ranking Michigan State.
That, and we've got the game of the year in college football.
This is
Michigan, Ohio State. Little college basketball Jenna telling you about. Little football our graphics team's telling you about.
Everything. I was going to get there eventually.
What's happening,
Z?
Let's go, man. It's the week, man, of the game. Can't mess that up.
You guys are going to hold that L, man.
Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. What a night from LeBron James. Scored 51 points in the Lakers' big win over the Heat. Just the 13th time LeBron has scored 50 in his career. It's shocking. Nick, what'd you make of his night?
Well, I mean, he's just the 13th time. That puts him sixth all-time in 50-point games. Mm-hmm. Listen, LeBron, what I say last week, if LeBron's three's fallen, he going to hit you for 40
plus. Or if he
scores
a lot of points, look at the stat sheet, and you'll see his three-pointer was going down.
Six of them last night, including one at the very end.
Dad.
Take that, Pat Riley, with your little spicy comments on my way out of town. That was a brilliant game.
Oh, this was a message
LeBron
game, Jenna.
You're also 16.
This could have been a horrible trip to Florida. They had lost to Orlando the night before. They're on a back-to-back. And LeBron's got a little something for Pat Riley, and he gave it to him in the 51. You could see that he was sending a message.
Back to the NFL now. Colts threw the doors off the Titans 38-10. Andrew Luck had his seventh straight game with at least three touchdown passes. See, how impressed have you been with Andrew Luck?
Very impressed. And Jenna, you know I'm always matchmaking for you. I'm always trying to get you out on the stories with guys who are a great story. Jenna,
that's it.
This is another one of your guys. Him, Steph,
yeah.
Andrew Luck. I mean, what they're doing with him, having him back playing football for this organization, because you talking about the difference between night and day. Andrew Luck, this guy is a legitimate star, and it's hard to live up to hype when Mel Kiper tells you you're the best since Peyton Manning, Elway. Oh, my goodness. But it's great to see him. And Frank Wright, the coach there, who was their second or third choice. Man, you got to give him a lot of credit.
Not surprising that Andrew Luck's great play, that streak, has coincided with a five-game streak of not being sacked. They have been able to – Quentin Nelson might be the rookie of the year as an offensive lineman.
Personnel department, tremendous amount of upgrade, especially on that offensive line.
Cowboys beat the Falcons on a game-winning field goal. Ezekiel Elliott had over 200 yards from scrimmage and a touchdown. See, what'd you make of Zeke's day?
Oh, he's special now. And now they're starting to find a way, like they did in his rookie season, to get him to that second level. Offensive line, since Mark Colombo took over, is their new offensive line coach. You can see the improvement that they're making, a lot more double teams at the line of scrimmage. He's a special, special player. You could see yesterday afternoon, how explosive he was, though. He seemed like he had an extra little gear yesterday. So looking forward to seeing him on Turkey Day.
He's got a chance to win the rushing title again. He wanted his rookie year. He could win it this year. The only reason I believe he didn't win it last year was the suspension.
Yes.
He has been the best runner of the football since he came into the league. Now, Gurley might be the better all-around back, but he's been the best guy to hand the ball off to since he came into the league. He was great.
Incredible hair growth as well, especially in the
big
last
old
couple
head,
of
big
weeks.
Big old hair.
Cam Newton and the Panthers taking on the Lions. Down 7, a minute to go. Cam finds DJ Moore in the end zone. Carolina decides, you know what, we're going to win this. We're going to go for two on the road. Cam Newton gets the ball. Plenty of time to throw, but cannot connect with Jarius Wright. Panthers lose 20-19. Here's head coach Ron Rivera on the decision to go for the win.
Well, I think you go for two on the road to win the game. And that's what I did at the end of the day. What's to say the coin toss is going to go in our favor? What's to tell you we're going to stop them? So why not go for two? I was going for the win. That's just the bottom line.
I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. He trusted in me, and I got to up him at end of the bargain, uphold my end of the bargain, and I didn't do that. I let this team down, and I just got to be better.
All right, Nick. I mean, we can't criticize coaches for playing too conservative and then also criticize them for being aggressive.
Well, sure,
and aggressive
we can. That's kind of half of sports television. We absolutely can. We try not to.
It wouldn't be fair.
But it wouldn't be fair.
What about in this specific sense, what Ron Rivera was faced with?
All right, you've got to recognize that Rivera's post-game comments, I do not think were honest. I think he was trying to protect his kicker. I do not think all things created equal, he goes for two there in every spot. And typically, even though I love being aggressive, if I think I have the better team, I don't want the game to come down to one play. And the Panthers are better than the Lions. But the reason, in my eyes, it was smart to go for two, that you should have gone for two, is Graham Gano, who hadn't missed a field goal all year, missed a field goal in this game of the exact length of an extra point and missed an extra point in this game. So I felt like if Graham Gano was maybe 75% to make that extra point, his confidence had been rattled. And by the way, the play design was great. You have it protected. You have a guy open. And Cam, it's a shame because he had played an awesome football game. Cam made a terrible play. He owned it afterwards, see, but like, I got no, given the fact that Gano was having the worst game he's had with the Panthers, given the fact that you felt like you could get those yards, I don't mind them going for it. Cam just missed the throw.
But do the players resent that, CeCe, when you know what your head coach is doing? Do the players say, well, that's not the right decision?
Well, this is the thing. It was the right decision. Coaching philosophy has always been on the road, go for the win. If you're the home team, play for the tie because you have the home crowd and everything. Also, forget what the normal theory is. I have the best athlete that's ever played the position. It's hard for Ron Rivera to ever be wrong. He is the most dynamic two-way quarterback that's ever played this game. 99 years, 6'5", 245. All right? And if you have that guy, and if that guy can't get you the two-point conversion with the way he was playing, then you're in trouble. Cam has been playing some of the best football of his career from the pocket. And you could see they only rushed four, and their nose guard was almost like a spy. He didn't rush at all. And he's the one that caused Cam problems. That's why Cam panicked at the last minute in his fundamentals. Watch his lead foot, his left leg. It steps out to his left. And it didn't step to his target. That's why his ball sailed. It's also been one of Cam's problems throughout his career. He was great in this game in the most critical moment. That's why your fundamentals are important. And it's hard to repeat them. And in that moment, he rushed and he jumped. Didn't step to his target and stick it on. He knew. And afterwards, you could see the growth. I knew a Cam Newton, MVP of the league, who couldn't finish answering questions at the Super Bowl. Yesterday, he did the right thing.
Listen, if there's going to be criticism of Ron Rivera, and people always go to the easiest possible criticism, this is what it should be. He didn't know if they were going for two before they scored the touchdown. They had two timeouts. They had two timeouts. They scored a touchdown with north of the one, about a minute seven left. You've got to know what we're doing. He knew Gano had missed the extra point in the field goal before that touchdown scored. You have to know, and your players have to know, if we score, we're going for it. Because in that situation, because they burned a timeout. They burned a timeout to talk about it. In that situation, with two timeouts and over a minute left, even if you don't get it, you're going to get the ball back. Now, you're not going to have a lot of time, but you're going to have a shot. We've seen the Panthers win a game this year on a 60-plus yarder. Like, you're going to have the ability.
You need those timeouts.
You need those timeouts.
Yeah. I don't think it's that important that the players know you're going to go for two. I think it's more important that the players, is a constant philosophy of what the organization and what the teams and how they're going to play. When you get off the bus on a given day, what's going to be our philosophy? What's going to be our theme? What are we going to do? And there's a reason why Ron Rivera got the name, Riverboat Ron. It's because he has decided to gamble and go for it. And this was not, to me, it was not a big, big gamble. So it's not that important that the players know on the last drive. It's not that important. It's important that our philosophy stays consistent and that we're going to be aggressive.
All right. Let's move on to the Ravens. They debuted their first-round pick in this year's draft yesterday. Lamar Jackson making his first start for the injured Joe Flacco. The rookie beat the Bengals yesterday 24-21. I'd say it's a good start. He threw for 150 yards, rushed for a buck 17 on 27 carries. Baltimore now sits at 5-5. Here is Lamar on his first win.
I'm a rookie. My first time starting to just go out there and be myself. You know, my teammates had my back, I had theirs.
I thought he played very poised. I thought he played the position. I thought he played quarterback very well. Managed us, operated us, got us in the right formations. Cadence was excellent. You know, for a first-time-out rookie in an environment like that, to have all those operational things go well, I think speaks to his intelligence, his studiousness, just his ability to run the show. And that says everything. Now, after that, the playmaking, you know, that comes from God.
See, I watched this whole game. I was anxious to see how he was going to do. You talked so much about Lamar Jackson coming out of the draft. We hadn't really seen so much of him, especially in a position like this. If he was nervous, you didn't see too much of it. He looked like he handled himself pretty well. What were your impressions of Lamar Jackson?
Lamar Jackson is good to win. I thought that this was Christmas served early as far as the Bengals and their defense. They were going to help him playing professional football. And we have seen all the other quarterbacks. You go top to bottom. Baker, down to him. Five of them drafted in first. And we thought all of them would start at some point. All of them had, and all of them have had tremendous struggles along the way. That's what the National Football League should be about. And we've seen it. And he struggled throwing the ball. He struggled reading some coverages. They had a very, very simple, simple game plan. And they were successful in winning this game. No problem. But he won't have no long career running that ball 27 times because he does not have the body. Now, he can Harbaugh can say, oh, his God-given ability that with his quickness and build with his overall speed. But, no, you cannot design that many runs the way they did in this game. I can understand getting through the first game. But for any of the quarterbacks, and we just talked about Cam Newton, 6'5", 245. Man, Lamar, he is not that. So they have to design something. Congratulations. Welcome to the NFL. Good win at home against the poorest defense that we have in the NFL. But they have to be able to change the game plan moving forward, or he's going to have some serious health problems.
See, you just said Cam is the most physically gifted quarterback in NFL history.
Yes.
The best at what dual threat quarterback we've seen.
And body.
And well, right. And Cam's career high in carries is 17. He had 27 yesterday. The NFL record.
Lamar.
The NFL record post-merger was 22. That was Tim Tebow, and he wasn't a quarterback. He was an H-back trying to play quarterback, and they knew he had to run the football. And Tebow, to his credit, did have the body. Tebow had a fullback's body. Like, Tebow, you were worried about Tebow throwing the ball. You weren't that worried about Tebow getting hurt. Like, the Ravens can win like this, and they maybe even can steal a wild card spot playing like this. But this is not what is sustainable for Lamar's career. There's a reason that going into the draft, people weren't saying maybe he should play running back. They were saying maybe he should play wide receiver. Now, he said, I can't catch. That's silly. I've always been a quarterback. But guys like that don't play running back. They don't have 20-plus carries in a football game. I give him a ton of credit, and I understand that the Ravens didn't know which of three quarterbacks were going to start. So they had to have a simple game plan. They had to try to win. Their season was falling apart. They went from 3-1 to 4-5, and they had to get a win. But this has to change immediately if he's going to have any type of long-term success.
If he's good enough to win as a dual threat, maybe it's one game, maybe it's a game and a half. Is he good enough to win just throwing the ball? Do the Ravens have a good enough line? Do they have good enough protection? Why, do they have a good enough team around him where if he wasn't going to run the ball 27 times, he could still win?
Oh, no. There's a reason why he was drafted at the end of the first round. I mean, his throwing motion is not pure. He's inconsistent. You can see sometimes he throws the ball sidearm, and he's height challenged a little bit. He's probably like 6'1", you know, so Baker Mayfield probably a little bit taller than him. So, no, you can't. He is a hybrid quarterback, and you have to develop a system for a hybrid. He's not a drop back, but he's not a 27 carry a game guy. Michael Vick, who is a better runner with the football than him and has a better body than he had. It took him four games as a rookie to reach 27 carries. So, no, you have to come up with a system to be able to take advantage of both. It can't be too much of either.
Right.
Too much in the pocket, and it definitely can't be like it was yesterday.
Vic's career high in carries was 15. Like, this is – people just got to understand what they were seeing, that this was an outlier of outliers. Again, if they had rushed him 15 times, it would be top five most times since the merger.
Like, they rushed him 27.
They rushed him almost double that. And so the Ravens, by the way, they have a great defense. They have an excellent rushing attack, even absent of Lamar. The kid yesterday, Gus Edwards, he had a great game to go along with Lamar Jackson. So I understand what they're doing. But for him, this has to be a one-time thing. Like, the next game, the carries have to be cut more than in half. And now maybe with knowing he's going to be the starter with a week to prepare, that's what they'll do. And he also, you mentioned how bad the Bengals' defense has been. That has mostly been their pass defense, and he wasn't able to fully take advantage of it. So I'm happy for Lamar because he was, I thought, unfairly scrutinized before the draft. They got to win. They're right. 500. Maybe it'll be his job the rest of the way. But he's got to be more sore this morning than he has at any point in his football career. And so you can't do this week.
Did you see RG3 come in for the one play? Mm-hmm. He got excited and he came out with the finger up, and it was nice to see him at least
on the field. Game, actually. For sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, coming up, are the Saints far and away the best team in the league? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Welcome to the show. Our favorite guest, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini.
Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Three in a row, Jenna.
Yeah, that's right, Nick. Keep
three guests in a row.
That's
she is called
talk
our favorite
less
guest.
And think more.
You actually are my favorite.
Favorite in
guest.
The moment.
That's
in,
not what yeah. she said.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the Saints because the Saints are really good. I swear I did not mean to say
read
that.
The, please do the highlight, Jenna.
I swear that's not what I meant.
Mr. Tickles, let me have your job.
The Saints played what looked like a JV opponent yesterday in the Philadelphia Eagles, and boy, they beat him handily, 48-7. We're moving on. For the Saints, their ninth win in a row, Drew Brees continued his MVP campaign, throwing for 363 yards, four touchdowns. On the other side, not nearly as nice. Wentz threw three picks, just 156 yards as Philly falls to 4-6 now on the season. Their worst loss ever by a defending Super Bowl champion. Here is Saints quarterback Drew Brees on the big win.
We do come out with a lot of confidence because we know the amount of preparation that has gone into that. So each and every time we touch the ball, we feel like we're going to make the plays, right? That we have a good game plan and that, hey, all of a sudden adjustments need to be made. Hey, we know how to make those. You know, we know where our matchups are. We know, you know, I think there's just a lot of confidence that goes into, you know, each and every time we get the ball, you know, what do we need to do to put points on the board this drive?
You know, I've played a lot of football games in my career ever since I was a kid, and this is one of the worst losses I've ever been a part of. And, yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating all the way around, offensively, defensively, special teams. We just got beat. Plain and simple, we got beat. I got to be better, and it starts with me, especially offensively. I have to get that thing going earlier and early and often. We talk about it all the time, and we just haven't been able to get it fixed. So, yeah, it was definitely a frustrating one today, but at the end of the day, we're going to get out of here. We're going to watch this film, and we're going to go play a couple of NFC East opponents here and see what we're made of.
It's about as half full as Carson Wentz can make that glass. Coach, you look at the Saints, you want to say, are they the best team in the league? But you have to factor in who they played yesterday and how that team played yesterday.
Yeah, when you're dealing with the Saints, it's difficult because there's so many things offensively that they can do. So it's the shifting, it's the motioning, it's the multiple personnel groups, it's the different formations. And then you heard Drew Brees talk about their understanding of what the defense is doing and their ability drive to drive to come off the field and say, okay, this is where we need to attack next. Combine that with two running backs that are complementary that they can put in it and really not skip a beat with either guy, but affect the defense totally different ways based off of their styles. It makes it incredibly difficult. So that part is challenging. Defensively, they're getting better. You know, Eli Apple's playing better than he had been playing. The system-wise, it looks like they're getting more and more comfortable playing together. Now, they also have the advantage of typically playing with a lead or knowing that they can take some chances because they're going to score so many points. I'd say the other thing that's underrated is Mike Westhoff went there about mid-year last year. He's a special teams coach, and he was my special teams coach in New York. He's really, really good at what he does, but he's also a great sounding board. He provides a level of insight and experience that can help any head coach, regardless of how many years they've been there. And I don't think the special teams play really gets talked about enough, and that gives him another significant edge.
Every play with the Saints, especially from a special teams with Mike Westhoff, And offensively, it's so intense because it can be an explosive play. They're trying to attack you. Special teams-wise, Mike Westhoff and Taysom Hill, the quarterback extraordinaire BYU, like that Sean Payton is in love with. So every time they can get his hands on the football in the offense, so it's special to see. Also, from a defensive standpoint, after 10 games, you can say what you want about the numbers. But the numbers would say this is the number one rush defense. And the reason why is because, man, Drew Brees and them get the lead on you. So they, Dennis Allen, that defense, they only have to defend a certain amount. So they're going to play a lot of nickel defense. They're going to take you out of the running game because with their offense and the threat. So now, how good do you have to be in this NFL defensively? You have to be decent on third down, and you got to be decent in the red zone. And if you don't give up those big chunk plays, you don't have to be a great defense when you have the type of quarterbacks and throwing. So I think the Saints, this is something that is sustainable. I do think that they are the most dangerous team in the NFC because I believe this style for which they adopted last year, they're one of the few teams that I see some carryover. The only reason why they weren't playing Philly for the NFC Championship was because the miracle that happened there in Minneapolis. I think people forget how their season ended. Absent that first game, Tampa Bay, where they got Fitzmagic, man, they have continued from what they were doing in 17 over to 18, which is very, very rare in the NFL.
Man, it's hard to blow teams out in this league. It's even harder to blow out desperate defending champion teams. This is the worst loss a defending Super Bowl champion has ever suffered, points-wise. This was yesterday, all day long, every game's a one-score game. Every game except for the Colts game.
Right.
The Colts beat the brakes off the Titans, and the Saints mollywopped the Eagles. Hey, Traquan Smith, we're not so comfortable with our number two receiver. So uncomfortable bringing Dez Bryant, then bringing Brandon Marshall. Traquan Smith, best day of his career. 10 catches, a buck 57, and a touchdown. Drew Brees completed 73% of his passes and lowered his career or his season completion percentage. The Saints, if they had an average quarterback, they would have a pretty good offense given their running game. If they had no running game, they would have a pretty good offense given their quarterback. When you put them together, there are no right answers to this test that the Saints are giving. And they are putting themselves in position to where they're not going to have to deal with the X factor of, oh, my God, it's a snowstorm and windy. They're not going to have to deal with pouring rain. Like, they keep winning. Everything goes through the perfect conditions of the Mercedes Superdome. And that nobody wants to go there right now.
We got to talk about the other side and what's going on with the Eagles. I mean, where do you start? Start with their secondary. Breeze through touchdown passes to Carr, Smith, Thomas, Kamara, and my friends Marcy and Marnie all in one game. It was kind of impressive. He had their way with them. I don't know when you look at this Eagles team, where you can, I mean, I guess Carson Wentz is doing okay, but everywhere else.
And Carson Wentz wasn't good.
And Carson Wentz yesterday was not good. How shocking is it that they have had such a severe and drastic drop-off from last year, Coach?
It's not that shocking. I talked about it in the preseason. I've talked about it all season. When you're in that position.
Coach, you talked about how fun it was. He was like, watch and see this year. We'll see how much fun that they're going to be having.
Yeah, there's no conga lines at this point. They're not taking shots at the Patriots. And look, it's legitimately something that you have to teach your team how to deal with. And we say it all the time. Deal with adversity. Everybody spends time on that.
Yes.
Dealing with success, understanding how to handle success the right way, that's not an easy skill to master either. And you have to be able to if you want to be able to have sustained success. And every team they play is taking their best shot. Even yesterday, the Saints go for it on 4th and 7 and throw a touchdown. It's a little bit of that. It's a little poking.
Oh, yeah. Malcolm Jenkins gets up and flips the bird to Sean Payton. He was like, yeah, hey, how's that Super Bowl crown? How is that defending that Super Bowl championship? I told you guys there would be problems this season based on the organization. They got all types of championship stuff in the locker room. Trying to duplicate the previous season's success in the NFL is harder than any of the other sports. That's why it's very, very rare to repeat. And I think that your stories are so refreshing as far as the time New England. When did they miss the playoffs? When did they struggle? It was after their first success and what you went through. And not knowing, you were like, we did not know. And we we, man, learn so much in our failure, more so than we did in our success.
And they may end up just like we did. We ended up 9-7 that season. We missed the playoffs, the whole division at that point. The Jets were 9-7. The Dolphins were 9-7. And the Jets went to the playoffs based off the tiebreaker. It could be the same thing in their division, or they could potentially sneak into the playoffs, you know, depending how this all shakes out. But it's this journey that you take after winning the Super Bowl that's uncharted waters for everybody involved.
Here's what's so disappointing to me about Philly. Is they had a perfect line of demarcation in their season where it could have gone one of two different ways. They're in London against Jacksonville at a disappointing 3-4. They get that win. You got that 6-hour plane ride back and then your bye week to say, hey, everything guys were saying who have won championships was true. We can't just roll the ball out. It is a different team. But despite all of that, we're one game back in our division. Washington at the time was dealing with all their injuries on their offensive line. We come out this next week against a wounded Cowboys team, get a win. We control everything. We can put the first half of the year behind us. And they came out the next week against Dallas and got beat three separate times in that football game. And then this week didn't even put up a fight against the Saints. Like, these couple weeks were a chance to get them back on the other track, and they went the other way.
It's impossible. I don't care where you go. You can go in outer space. But if you got a bad offensive line, you got a bad secondary, you're not going to win the NFL. So going to London didn't cure that. It's only, you know, over the bye week what it did? People start looking at it, and they're starting to exploit. That offensive line, they are going after the quarterback, taking them immediately out of the running game, and everyone's going after the their secondary, and even Malcolm Jenkins. The only starter that they have remaining, man, this is life in the NFL when you're at the top of the hill.
And it's not going to change. People are going to keep taking their best shot through the rest of the season.
All right, let's take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, how was Pittsburgh able to steal a win yesterday? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, we are going viral. Odell Beckham Jr. had 74 yards and a touchdown in the Giants' 38-35 win over the Bucks on Sunday. No one happier than this fan who got to take home an OBJ souvenir.
Man. Ah! There were five kids around that guy
that Odell was
tossing the ball to, and my man just snatched it.
He was happier than any of those kids.
That's the way I was after the game, the Sixers, man, getting Jimmy Butler's shoes, man. The people was like, you're going to get some kids? Man, get off of me. I can't wait to play in these J's, man. Take out his orthotics and everything. I was at the Sixers game.
And has no shame. Had you met Jimmy Butler before?
Yes.
Okay. My apologies.
Yeah, I sat in his suite for the Super Bowl. He was up there drinking some expensive wine and everything. Nick, what do you think? I just was born. This ain't my first show.
No,
I think I just got to the rodeo.
I understand.
I done rode some horses in this show and everything. Jimmy Butler's like, yo, bruh. Let me get them shoes. He was like, of course, legend. Okay. Of course, whatever else you need. You need gear. That's what he said. What do you want me to do, bro? I mean, I've been places before in life. I just didn't get here. Coach, what do you want me to do? I was just like that guy right there. Let me get them J's. These kids, they got a long life to live. Back off. Boom, get back off of me.
That little boy over to the left there, he's traumatized.
Yes, look exactly. At his,
he just can't figure out how that dude snatched it from him.
Snatched the ball.
Yeah. If you look closely, you can figure it out. Back to Big Ben and the Steelers.
Whoa.
Trying to make it 6 wins in a row, taking on the team that, for whatever reason, has their number in the Jaguars. Big Ben threw 3 picks, including that one in the end zone.
Just like Jim.
To Jalen Ramsey. See, Steelers down 16-0. Then the comeback. Here we go. Down 3, less than a minute to go. Roethlisberger connects with Antonio Brown, who takes it down to the 2. 8 seconds left. Big Ben runs it in for the touchdown. Steelers go on to win. Jags have now lost 6 in a row. 20-16 was your final. Here's Ben Roethlisberger after the game on the comeback.
We just never quit, you know, and that's what's kind of special about this group is we're going to fight to the end, and we literally fought to the end.
Against a defense that's they make their feelings known, how did it feel for you to get the last laugh in this case?
Well, they're a really good defense. Like I said, they like to talk a lot before the game, during the game, but I'm carrying the game ball home.
Not as much after the game, before and during especially. Coach, what did the Steelers show you in their win yesterday?
To me, they've been consistent throughout the year, and they've been consistent over the years, or Ben has, where he can go out and throw 3 interceptions, but he's resilient, and they're resilient. And whenever you start to rule the Steelers out. Whenever you think that they're finally out of it or they're buried, they come back and they show you that they can win.
Coach, I don't find many people, and I don't mean to cut you off, I don't find many people who analyze this game on a regular basis, though, through the years, that is consistent with the Pittsburgh Steelers like you. Because the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though they're not consistent, and they got a different function, and you've taught us different families got a different vibe, and they got different rules that apply to them of how they're going to move forward. And you've made me clear, and I've been a Steelers fan because I'm about organizations, and I'm about head coaches and empowering them. And that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers do as well as anyone. But, man, you've taught me so much about Pittsburgh and how they do business. And, man, you, even when I tend to, man, I'm getting ready to lose faith in Pittsburgh, you're like, this is how they do things. And why is that?
Because playing against them for as long as we did and as many times, either playing against Ben directly or dealing with the organization as a whole, I've seen it over and over again where you think, okay, that now it's a down year. Now Ben's really reached a point where he's not going to be able to come back. But his resilience, it rolls off his back, and he goes out the next drive, and he plays that drive like every other drive didn't exist. And that is a tremendous trait for anybody to have. But for your quarterback to have, it's fantastic. And everybody else around him knows. So you're sitting on that sideline, all right, Ben threw three picks. All right, now we'll go win the game. And I think there's that mentality there.
And I think that filters down from the quarterback. I also think it filters down from the coach. And last week we talked a lot about Doug Peterson's press conferences and how they've been this message, then this message, and that he's kind of learning on the fly. Other than Belichick, who's consistent in the press conference in a very droll, monotonous way, nobody is as consistent with their facial expression, their tone of voice, their message, win or lose, in the press conference as Mike Tomlin. Like, he is very clear. He's always going to use one of his lines of, nice to escape here with a win in the national football. Like, you know what you're going to get from him, and his players know that. And that's one of the reasons why you had said previously, see, the Steelers were a different team away from Heinz Field. For the last couple years, they're now 14-1-1 in their last 16 road games. The tie and the loss both in overtime, one to the Bears and the one Browns earlier. Like, to have that type of success on the road, given all the drama surrounding the team, be it player suspensions, holdouts, things like that, that is a testament to Mike Tomlin.
And no coach lost a player, a top-flight all-pro player, like Pittsburgh lost this week. This week. Like, no, the coaches even, you know how humiliating that must be for Mike Tomlin? One of the best coaches that's ever coached this game as an African-American. He's texting one of his star players. He's trying to call him, and the player's not responding? Like, not even giving them no feedback? And then he's got to go to the media and be like, you know something? We getting ready to move on. The Pittsburgh Steelers weren't a better team this week after L. Bell.
Right.
No, there was no team that faced it. And I would say even what Washington faced yesterday, losing their quarterback as far as, Alex Smith. Like, that's a bad injury. That's what Pittsburgh went through this week. And that's what Mike Tomlin has dealt with year after year. How do I get through some type of adversity? How do I get through that? And he had a very, very tough week. And he stood up there like an NFL head coach is supposed to do and had very good talking, consistent message points for his team and for his fan base.
All right, so as good as the Steelers have been, it makes what happened yesterday all the more confusing. If there was ever a team in the last 2 years that have had the Steelers' number, it's got to be the Jaguars, who are not playing good football, but somehow, all except for the last 5 minutes yesterday, own the Steelers, and last year as well.
I think it speaks to the importance of Antonio Brown in the Steelers' offense, because clearly nobody gives him fits the way Jalen does. Jalen is a tremendous football player. I know we talk about the comments, and right now he's having to eat a lot of those comments, and if the trade rumors are true, he might have to go play on a team with one of the quarterbacks he trashed, because the odds are, I mean, most of the quarterbacks in the league are on that
list. Well, one that he did trash beat him yesterday.
Absolutely. But, like, and Jalen got beat on a couple plays late, but I think that what they are able to do in the secondary against the Steelers, that's been the secret sauce to Jacksonville. But the flip side of that is Jacksonville is so terrified in big games of Blake Bortles killing them that in the second, once they got up 16-0, four straight three and outs, First down on every single drive, a run up the middle. Second down on three of the four drives, a run up the middle. They punted every single time. They did not want to let Bortles make a mistake, and it gave the Steelers too many extra chances.
Well, but look, in fairness to them, though, they ran the ball, what, 9 times in a row to start the game? They were running the ball very effectively.
Only 2 things happened. You're right, Cole. Keep going.
And they were playing really good defense. They had intercepted Ben 3 times. So for them
– And they only had a 16-point lead.
Yeah, from a conservative standpoint, you could see why they would think – okay, if we run the ball, which we've done well the entire game, and we play good defense, we're going to get out of this okay. No, that's why instead of putting it in Bortles' hands and potentially make a mistake to lose the game, they wanted to make the Steelers beat them, and unfortunately, the Steelers were able to.
And there was only 2 things that Pittsburgh had to make the adjustments to stop. Stop them on the first down run and stop them from the checkdowns to the running back. That's all they had to take away from them. So it's easy when we've seen it to place the blame on Jacksonville. Oh, they got conservative. There was only 2 things they were doing. Run the ball on first down, and the quarterback was dropping back, looking way down the field, and checking it down to the running back, and the running back was making the linebackers miss. So it wasn't as if they had to make wholesale changes to be able to slow down this offense that's not very, very explosive.
And they didn't really get conservative. They were conservative from the very start. They just didn't adjust.
Yeah, this wasn't a New England game.
Yeah, no.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.